is anyone using it, the beta version of 2018, on Windows 7? And the reason I asked there was someone posed a question to me, how, if it does work on Windows 7. I imagine most people on the beta test would probably be in Windows 10 by now.
This is on the Apple phone, the iPhone, iOS 11, and actually 11.3 now, but it has been at least for two. When I use the message app and delete a message, I get this null, and then if I delete a second message, I get a second null, and a second or two or three later, I get thrown out of the message app completely. Does anyone have this problem, or what the solution is?
But I do know Jennifer Harnish was raising the same question at some point, and she seemed to think that, just doing the app switcher, closing the app, brought it back to normal, at least for the moment.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if that you've done that. But
I've done that, and it does it, but the case, and this is really strange, that when, say, if you delete one message, you'll see the null for a while, but then you'll, say, delete another message, and you'll see there'll be basically two nulls there, and then all of a sudden you just get thrown out of the message. The message just
Yeah, there are a lot of issues in 11, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
And even in mail, there are issues when you try to delete it. It also, it doesn't go to the act when you
the rotor
tap it. It should open the message, but it instead of deletes it. So the default changes once you do the last action. That's what remains as the.
Sneesh, is that problem with the default action being delete, is that in mail or is it both mail and messages?
Mail and messages also, there are some issues, and I have no idea, yesterday it was updating by itself, and for every name on my message list, it added maybe, you know, so it may say maybe Frank, maybe John. So I don't know what's going on, and it's crazy because iOS 11 has just gone a little nuttier than in terms of accessibility, you know, I think they know it, but
what are people using for their virus protection? At some point, I think it was Comcast. Someone put Norton on their machine, and it's worked out fine. But it's got a piece of software from a company that made their software from Germany, I guess, and it didn't like our virus protection software. Basically. Quarantined it, and it was really difficult to, you know, to fiddle around and change that. You know, it took playing around with the JAWS mouse and all this kind of stuff. So I was just, and the person who was plugged into this, that told us about the software, said, "Oh, you really shouldn't use Norton. You should just use one of the other accessible virus protectors." And then they couldn't give us an answer as to really what we should be using.
Are you running Windows 10 now, John?
Yes.
Because I know on Windows 10 you can run, I think they recommend running Windows Defender.
I kind of favored Microsoft stuff as well. I run Defender on my Windows 10 machine. I can tell you it's becoming more and more of a problem using accessibility software with third-party antivirus software. The other day I ran into a huge problem with Norton. And you wouldn't think Norton because Norton's a fairly popular, well-known, and developed program. It absolutely would refuse to accept that the version 11 of ZoomText was not a keylogger. You know, it kept shutting down that.
So, Frank, do you find Windows Defender is pretty accessible?
It's totally accessible. So, first of all, I apologize if I seem like I've been out of touch more so than I normally am. And the reason for that is for the past week, Nina and I have not had access to email. We get our email through Comcast's hosted exchange. We pay for Comcast to host the exchange server on their servers. We, at one time, ran an exchange server in our basement, and just the routine maintenance that I decided it'd be better off if we just paid someone to do it. For many years now, I've been paying Comcast to host Exchange. A couple of months ago, they decided, because 2007 is no longer supported by Microsoft, that they would change their platform. And instead of getting Exchange 2012, or a newer version of Exchange, they were going to just resell Microsoft 365 for Business, the enterprise version of Office 365. And they sent a little, nice little email to all the customers, ourselves included, saying that you could click here to opt into this migration, or you could basically go pound sand somewhere and not do business with us. And of course, I said, that's fine with me. I mean, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I clicked the little button. So they said, you know, thank you. Here's the date for your migration, which was the 9th, which was this past Monday. And they said, you'll be receiving the instructions on how to handle your DNS prior to that. I took on faith that they would actually send out the information I needed to make the changes. And I'll tell you what changes need to be made before they could go ahead and do that. Prior to the migration, so come Friday, nothing. Saturday, nothing. Sunday, obviously nothing on the weekend. Monday, tick, 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 nothing. So on Monday, they start the migration. That changed the back end of the email. So now our email is now unavailable. No one can email us because the DNS records are pointing to a different server. Hold on, I'll go with that in a minute for those of you who don't know what that is. So, and we can't obviously email anyone else. So what it is that when you have any type of server, there's something called DNS records. And quick, someone tell me what DNS stands for? Domain? Name?
Server.
Name servers. So the reason for that is that the internet really works on numbers. It doesn't work on names. So when you type in something like www.google.com, it actually takes you to a number. And DNS is just a way of resolving names to numbers in its most barest format. But it does also lots of other things, too. It actually allows you to point different things to different places. So our email domain, you've heard me give my email address, is frank@littlebreezes.com. So our domain is, what is our domain? Littlebreezes.com, exactly. The domain is the part to the right of the at sign. And the internet is kind of like reading the Torah. You read from right to left. The top level domain is .com, then it goes to Little Breezes, then obviously on the left of the at sign is all of the accounts within that domain. So my domain name servers pointed mail.littlebreezes.com or smtp.littlebreezes.com back to Comcast old exchange server. So when someone sends a love letter to me addressed at frank@littlebreezes.com, the first thing that the DNS does is it looks at .com and knows it's a top-level server. So then it looks at the next thing, Little Breezes. So it goes out there and finds what they call an MX record, M Mary X-ray, mail exchange record. It looks in the DNS records, is there a mail exchanger record for littlebreezes.com? And it's like, oh, yes, there is. So we know there's a mail server associated with littlebreezes.com. And it says, where is that mail server? It'll give you an actual address. And it was something like wb14.comcast.net. And that address pointed back to Comcast's old, now defunct exchange server. So anyone who sent an email to anything at littlebreezes.com, could be Frank, could be Nina, could be Frank Don Ventura, DNS could not find that server. So they'd get a nasty old message back saying, host not found. And we would have no way knowing that, you know, grandma sent us a nice little email. So that's the way DNS works. Or in this case, it stopped working because they changed the location of the mail server. So think of DNS as kind of like a phone directory. Like you want to look up Big Bob's corner gas station. So you look up Big Bob's corner gas station and it points you to a number. DNS works the same. So now, this is Monday. They flip the switch, the exchange server is now offline, and our email is now going to the wrong place, so it's bouncing back. So Microsoft is changing over from their hosted exchange server, the server that they owned, to going out to Microsoft. So basically, they're just reselling Microsoft. So we need to associate our domain with Microsoft's servers, the 365 servers now. Now, that should be, you think it would be really easy. You just change the address in the phone book. Oh, here's a problem. If it was that easy, couldn't anyone change my domain and point it to somewhere else to screw with me?
Yes.
Yes. So Microsoft knows that. So they are smart. They realize, well, we need to make sure there's a way that we can verify that you own that domain. So there's something called a .txt record in DNS. And .txt, yeah, we talked about MX records being pointed to mail servers, name records just pointing to a name, that type of thing. .txt is just a way of associating a string of text with your domain. So the way that I have to add that record in is I contact my domain registrar, the domain registrar being the company that registers my domain for me with the, you know, the Internet ICANN service out there. So they're the ones that keep track of all my information. And I call them up, and if I want to make a DNS change, I could either go on your website and give my password, I call them up and I give my security questions. Now, I'm not going to tell you what those are because I know this group will have a lot of fun screwing with my DNS records, yeah. and then make the changes. So what Microsoft needs to see is this very specific string. It's almost like a password that Comcast is supposed to email me and I'm supposed to put that string into my DNS records. That way, Microsoft could look at the DNS records of littlebreezes.com and say, oh yes, Frank put that secret string in that we told him. We know that he now owns that domain. Remember, this was supposed to be done on the 9th, which was Monday. Right. When do you think I got that email telling me what that string was?
This morning.
This morning is the correct answer. So this is Comcast Business Class service, so this is over $100 a month that this is costing for an email that is now 9 days late. I want this to be a teaching moment. I don't want this to be the moment of trying to teach people don't use Comcast. I'm saying, because up to now, I've never had a bad experience with Comcast. I want this to be a teaching moment so people understand the technical aspects of what went wrong and why it went wrong. And if this happens to you, what kind of things you could do and how this kind of system kind of works. Now that string, that little password is in what they call the .txt record, which is just a string of text. Microsoft, with their 365, now that they know they own that server, they could start bringing in all my information. And when they finish doing that, which I think is going to happen this coming Monday, they will send me back another email. Like, again, this is the way it's supposed to work. Let's see if it does work. And they will tell me, good, we got your information. You verified that you own the domain. We now moved your information over to our 365 server. One more problem. What one thing that we have to do left? Remember, we talked about at the beginning of is that when you send an email to someone, the DNS server tells it where that mail server is. So the last step is I have to go back to the DNS records and change that mail exchanger record, what they call the MX record, to point to the 365 servers. Again, what is the one issue that could come up? They need to tell me where their servers are. So again, this is all dependent on this coming Monday. They move all the information over correctly, and they say, okay, we're ready. Here's the email, Frank. This is what to do. Again, my reason for saying this is that I don't want to scare anybody into not using any particular, you know, company or anything like that. I just want people to know what kind of things can go wrong behind the scenes, and that when you type in blah 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 dot blah 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 at blah 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 .com to get someone's to send someone an email, it's not really that magical. It's not that mysterious. It's actually fairly simple what's going on. And if you wonder how I got them to send me an email on the weekend, well, Nina's laughing because both Nina and I had a lot of good time calling up corporate headquarters and getting media evil on our high knees, basically. So we got a lot of frustrations out on them. But anyway, my point in doing this is to educate, use this as a teaching moment about what some of these, you know, fancy things like domain names, servers are, and what MX records are. And obviously we could talk about this all day, because this is a technology group.
I have Windows or Office 365 on a Windows 10 machine, and I'm using OneDrive, you know, to sync files with a couple machines. And I find on my new computer anyway, and I don't think it was the case in the old one, that if I'm offline, the files become read-only. Is that the way it's supposed to be?
Yeah, short answer is yes, and they do that to avoid synchronization issues. For instance, if you have five devices and one of them is offline and you make changes on that one and then you make changes on another one before while they're both offline, which copy is the real copy? So in order to make changes, you should be online. That's correct. Yeah.
So what if I ever change anything when I'm offline?
What you can do is always just copy it over back over. Say if you want to make a local copy of something, that then you can change that and just copy it back over when you're online.
And also, as far as text messaging is concerned, somebody mentioned that all these other applications appear at the bottom. I think it's in the app, in the messaging. And does anybody know how you use that or what that is, how you use those apps that are all listed as options?
I don't use them. I just flip to where I want to do my message.
I'm not entirely sure if you could actually do anything with that. I think that may just be telling you what apps can use messages, or at least connect to messaging, but I could be wrong about that.
One morning, I was listening to news on the iPhone, and all of a sudden I get this message, you accessed something that, and you probably have a Trojan horse or something like that. And I clicked on something to get out, and I got into what looked like the App Store. And then it said install, and of course I didn't do that. So this happened twice, and I took a picture, I took a screenshot, but unfortunately I don't have that anymore. So I'm just wondering right now whether this has happened to anybody else.
Maria, were you in Safari when this happened? What app were you in when this happened? Was it Safari?
I think it was either TuneIn Radio or Safari.
Okay. I actually just heard about this on the radio the other night, that there's a nasty exploit going around that actually behaves exactly the way you say it. It will put up a little nice little come on ad like that to make you think that, oh, man, something bad, I need to click on this. And what it does is actually creates a fake, like, App Store type thing, which is basically a phishing scam to get you to your account, the details and stuff like that. That's what it is. It's not that much different from, like, being on a PC and you get these, your computer may be infected right now, please click here, that type of thing. It's very much akin to that, so I have heard of that. I mean, other than clicking out of it, I don't think you can prevent it, yeah. As long as you don't actually get sucked in by it and don't actually click through it, yeah, you should be okay. I mean, I'm not sure how you got targeted. It may just be randomly picking IP addresses, or it may just be like an ad on in Safari that they're using to bring you in that way, but